You're listening to Discordia, over 50 years of student activism at Concordia University. On CJLO 1690 AM or online at cjlo.com.
My name's Piper, and I'm an independent artist, musician, and academic invested in researching alternative modes of storytelling. I live, work, and create within the unceded lands currently known as Montreal, and I'm currently enjoying engaging in forms of education and knowledge sharing situated outside of the academy after completing my master's thesis here at Concordia in spring of 2024. My background in campus community radio spans over a decade across several stations, and I'm very pleased to be here at CJLO, co-producing Discordia for you.
I'm Sydney. I'm originally from Cataraqui or Kingston and have been living in Jojage since 2010. I recently finished a PhD in interdisciplinary humanities at Concordia on the rise of magic, astrology, and related occult practices as resources for community building and political work in Montreal. I've done talk radio on antennas and CKUT, and I think of radio as a perfect methodology and companion to community-based research and activism. I'm looking forward to delving into the archives, making connections with other activists, and finding through lines in student solidarity movements in Montreal over the last half century. On October 13th, 2023, the Coalition Avenir Québec, or the CAQ, government, the party still in power at the time of airing this episode, announced plans to change the funding model related to university tuition. As of September 2024, tuition for new Canadian out-of-province undergraduate or master's students would go up to around $17,000 annually at English-speaking universities, making it among the highest in the country for domestic students and the highest overall excluding specialized programs.
This increase would nearly double the rate of tuition, which was just under $9,000 at the time of the announcement in 2023. International students would also see their fees rise to at least $20,000 a year. Under the measure, the provincial government would also collect the first $20,000 from international student degrees and reinvest that money in the French university system.
Some students would be exempt from these hikes, such as those covered by international agreements, including France and Belgium. The measure also does not apply to medical or PhD students. Students who were already enrolled before fall of 2024 were exempt from the hikes, permitted to finish their degrees at their current tuition rate. However, any changes to a degree might not be grandfathered into the current rate. Students who take longer than a five-year period to complete their degree, which is the case for many who are taking classes part-time, will also see their tuition increase eventually.
The Office of the Minister of Higher Education, along with the Office of the Minister of the French Language, published a joint statement outlining two objectives of the new tuition model. 1. The Quebec government will no longer provide net funding to Canadian students who come to study in our English-speaking establishments and who, for the most part, leave Quebec after graduation. And 2. It will allow a better balance to be achieved within the network thanks to the income generated by international students. Pascal Derry, Minister of Higher Education, had this to say.
Today, we are taking a strong step that is in line with our government's vision for the future of French. Quebecers will no longer pay for the training of English-speaking Canadian students, most of whom return to their province after graduation, a reality that costs taxpayers more than $100 million per year. As I promised, we will also correct the financial imbalance that exists between the French-speaking and English-speaking networks caused by previous governments. Thanks to this new pricing model, we are giving ourselves the means to implement strong measures to promote the French language, promote the French-speaking university network, and encourage the attraction and retention of non-Quebec French-speaking students in our institutions.
In response to the announcement, the Concordia Student Union, or CSU, and the Student Society of McGill University, or SMU, issued a joint statement on October 19, 2023, saying the move excludes students from quality education. Both groups planned town hall meetings to allow current students to voice their concerns about the issue.
McGill student Alex O'Neill, who you'll hear from later in this episode, and Concordia student Noah Sparrow organized a student-led movement comprising a one-day strike action on October 30th. This was dubbed the Blue Fall Protests, a nod to the 2012 Maple Spring strike against tuition hikes.
The goal of this action is to showcase to the Quebec government that students are in solidarity with each other. We thought someone needs to do something about this because this is discriminatory policy. This is completely ridiculous. And it's quite frankly, it's politicizing access to education.
We're very much trying to take this as from a grassroots approach to actually lead to a tangible reneging of this, you know, proposition from the National Assembly's tabling.
O'Neill said he sees the movement by Quebec as an attack on access to education. Thousands of students from McGill, Concordia, and Bishops took to the streets in protest, joined by French-speaking students as well. Photos show some students wearing the iconic red square popularized during the months-long 2012 tuition strike.
The fact that there are both French and English students involved, I'm hoping that the message that is sent is that this is not a language issue, as the Legault government likes to frame it as. This is an access to education issue. Education should not be politicized, and we are trying to fight for them to maintain the diverse student culture and body that Montreal is internationally renowned for.
Said the strike's co-organizer, Noah Sparrow.
There were two notable open letters published from heads of Francophone universities, split in their support of the proposed hikes. One letter, signed by Université de Montréal, Université Laval, Université de Sherbrooke, Polytechnique Montréal, and HEC Montréal, denounced the framing of out-of-province students as freeloaders whose education was being subsidized by Quebecers.
Responding to allusions that incoming students were a threat to the French language, at the same time that they are seen as cash cows designed to fix a budgetary crisis, the letter notes, "Rather, we must see these students as actors who contribute, like Quebec students, to the excellence, quality, diversity, and relevance of our establishments. We must attract these talents to our country, contribute to their francisation, integrate them, and retain them in Quebec, and failing that, expose them sufficiently to our culture so that they can promote our distinct society throughout the world. Our universities want to continue to play this role and can only achieve this by presenting themselves as open and welcoming spaces."
According to the heads of these five universities, the big shortfall is that no funding is actually being added at all. The new measures do not add funding to the envelope allocated to the Quebec University Network. They only redistribute current resources with perhaps marginal benefits. This reallocation refers to the fact that since 2019 in Quebec, fees from international students have been deregulated, allowing universities to pocket 100% of what they charge in exchange for no longer receiving government subsidies towards their education. Since 1997, the Ministère de l'Enseignement Supérieur, MES, or Ministry of Higher Education, has collected extra fees for students without Quebec resident status, meaning international and out-of-province students. These extra fees from, quote, foreign students have been used as a private revenue stream that allows the state to cut public funding on universities and to control exactly how student fee money is used and distributed.
Part of the plan with the 2023 hikes is to have some of these fees be allocated more equitably, so moving back to a regulated rather than a deregulated system. With proposed hikes, Pascal Dary claimed to be fixing an imbalance in Quebecois universities that had allowed Anglophone institutions to benefit more from the deregulation of international student tuition than Francophone institutions had. Quebec's three Anglophone universities bring in the lion's share of international student money. Since 2019, they account for $282 million from international students, compared with the $47 million collected by the 10 Francophone universities in the Université du Québec network, the government says.
So what this means is that first, austerity measures slashed government subsidies for international student education, which resulted in an uneven accumulation of funds at Anglophone universities given the larger global draw. As a result, this money is being clawed back to put into French universities under the guise of protecting the French language, when really the reason for the lack of funds at Francophone universities is the lack of funding from the government. Put differently, the CAQ is marketing cuts to higher education as an austerity policy primarily intended to protect the national integrity of Quebec by cutting funds to what they call freeloading foreigners.
The second letter that was published from the heads of 10 institutions in the Université du Québec network backed the government in the proposed hikes, but argued that it should be reframed as a discussion about the underfinancing of universities in general rather than a language issue. It says, "A rebalancing of income between all universities is necessary in order to meet the glaring workforce needs and give French language universities the means to contribute even more to the social, scientific, cultural, and economic development of Quebec." Both letters, therefore, criticize the pitting of Franco and Anglo students against each other, despite differing in their stances on the hikes themselves.
On December 14, 2023, in response to pressure from the universities themselves, the proposed hike was altered to $12,000, plus a French language requirement for out-of-province students at English universities. While lower, this is still a 33% increase from the 2023 rate. The language requirement stipulates that 80% of graduates must have achieved an intermediate level of French, an undertaking which McGill's Vice Chancellor Deep Saini calls impossible with the resources they have. Critics like Saini decry the absence of evidence that such a move will either contribute to greater protections for French or that they will serve Quebecers in other ways.
In February 2024, a few months after the announcement of the hikes, McGill and Concordia filed separate lawsuits against the Quebec government over the tuition hikes, claiming that they constitute discrimination under the province's Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Concordia argued that the changes infringe on the rights of English-speaking Canadians and were based on stereotypes about Anglophones.
From March 11th to 15th, 2024, 21,000 students from Montreal's English universities opted out of class, taking to the streets in protest of the tuition hikes on March 13th.
This is a threat to the identity of Concordia and McGill as a whole.
Thousands of students in Montreal from Concordia and McGill universities hit the picket lines Wednesday to denounce increasing tuition fees for out-of-province and international students at English universities.
In a joint Instagram post, the SMU and CSU called for the demonstration with the slogan, "Education is a right, not just for the rich and white."
On July 12, 2024, a Quebec Superior Court judge ruled against the request by Concordia University to suspend the provincial government's tuition increase. Justice Éric Dufort ruled that while Concordia had raised serious issues and proved it would suffer serious or irreparable harm, it didn't meet the high bar to have the government's policy suspended at this stage of the legal process, because it didn't prove there had been a clear violation of charter rights.
Members of the provincial Liberals and Montreal Mayor Valerie Plante have all publicly denounced the tuition hike plan, raising concerns that it is counterproductive to solving Quebec's labor shortage. Mayor Plante said, "What the hike will support is more people going to Toronto universities." Plante also encouraged the protection of French language through alternate means, namely positive and proactive measures like lowering tuition fees at Francophone universities.
Josh Kertes, a student at McGill, said he felt unappreciated. "It makes you feel unwelcome even though you contribute to Quebec while you're here," they say. Student Angelique Gauss also stated that it would be beneficial to mandate French classes for English universities in Montreal, highlighting students' willingness to learn French if they were given the tools to do so.
"My intention is to be able to make sure that students who follow in my footsteps, or in all of our footsteps, have the opportunities that I had in coming to Quebec, learning about the culture, being able to integrate into Montreal society."
In August 2024, Concordia University reported a nearly 30% drop in applications from Canadian students located outside Quebec following the tuition hike announcement. President Graham Carr said overall enrollment at the university is down 4% this year, and out-of-province students typically make up 9 or even 10% of the student body, while 21 to 24% are international students. At Concordia's Liberal Arts College, out-of-province students make up 30% of enrollment each year.
This decrease in enrollment and 4% decrease in government funding for fall 2024 has put financial strain on Concordia University. A starting deficit of $79.4 million is forecasted for the 2025 to 2026 fiscal year due to the carryover of the deficit from the last year and an additional shortfall of $44.9 million driven by factors such as declining enrollment, changes to government funding formulas, salary increases, and rising service contract costs. Student services have already been impacted, leaving many students feeling frustrated and underserved by their university.
Despite eventually receiving an exemption from the tuition hikes, Bishop's University has also seen a decline in enrollment that its principal attributes to the Quebec government's decision to hike tuition for out-of-province students, stating that it is discouraging students from coming to Quebec to study. The Quebec government adopted a bill in December 2024, giving the Education Ministry the power to restrict enrollment of international students in an effort to reduce overall immigration to the province.
My name is Alex O'Neill. I'm a current final year political science and English literature student at McGill University. On October 30th, 2023, myself and Noah Sparrow, who is a student in creative writing at Concordia University, organized a walkout against the proposed tuition hikes proposed by the higher education minister, Pascal Desrie, of the Quebec government. And essentially, our goal was to prevent these tuition hikes from happening, specifically for out-of-province students, and obviously make affordable education a goal for all. That would have been our ultimate goal.
You're from Quebec.
you're not affected by this. So why do you, and why should other unaffected students care about this issue?
I think it's important to frame this as a small piece of a much broader problem. We spoke to many people, and I have spoken to many people since from all across the city, who very much frame this as, you know, just a way for Quebec to Francisize the province, to create a society that is very exclusive and that is very much homogenous in its religious, ethnic, social, and cultural affiliations and ties. It's something that's linked, I think, to systemic racism in the province. By putting an additional financial barrier in front of these students, they're not going to come.
Can you tell me a little bit about what the process of actually organizing the march was like?
I remember waking up out of bed, and I have like my CBC News like notifications on my phone. I saw this like tuition's going to double for out of province students. So I spoke with Noah. You may know, like, we're life partners. So like he's, you know, like next to me, and we're like, okay, we need to do something and fast, right? So that this kind of stays like in the public eye. And so we essentially that day created an Instagram account, Blue Fall Protest, and we essentially just posted that, like, kind of like a call out to just essentially see, you know, when people would be willing to walk out. I essentially was able to confer with some of my colleagues at McGill, as well as like friends, fellow students, professors, you know, to just to gauge support. And Noah did the same on the Concordia side. We had basically agreed, like, you know, because there's a lot of international students involved, and because of the fact that getting involved in like student protest and mobilization can actually jeopardize their legal status in Canada, we felt it better to actually make sure that there was like at least like a cordoned off path, you know, in advance to make sure that, you know, this would have been run smoothly. And so that happened. I did speak briefly with public security, and I made it very clear that a lot of students are not comfortable with police presence. And so once we had that path available, we actually made it public just so people would know from the broader community about where to meet. We didn't pass a strike motion officially through either the CSU or the SSMU, just because we wanted intently to supersede bureaucracy. We did not want to deal with this because we knew that it was an issue of immediate concern. And the moment that it fell out of the public eye, it was going to take place. And, you know, the level of dissent would have absolutely dropped amongst students, and it kind of would just, you know, life would have gone on as normal. And so that's why we really wanted to just get that out there and try to get as many students involved. We had roughly about 2,000 people show up, you know, and walk along Sherbrooke Street and at the McGill Gates. Noah had actually organized for a few professors of English at Concordia to speak at the rally, of whom very much spoke to the, you know, issue of affordable education. We were also able to get Celeste Trianon, who's obviously very much known for her trans activism, framing this in a way that very much disaffecting like marginalized populations, you know, Indigenous people, trans people, and so forth. A few days after, we had a meeting with all of the union reps, and that's essentially where we got all of the criticism. And so that was at that point that, you know, Noah and I kind of stepped aside, and we essentially kind of let them guide it forward, just because we felt that at this point, like, we were so much at odds that there was just no coming to a compromise. So we were just like, okay, you know, you please guide it forward. And they didn't really. And that was very disappointing.
My name is May Shukla. I'm a member of the Revolutionary Communist Party in Montreal. That's one way I'm connected to the struggle against tuition hikes, because we're always there to support the struggle against austerity. From the perspective of communists, people always ask us, like, what are you doing in this movement? Like, are you just some outside agitator? Like, are you just trying to stir shit up? And what we insist is that we have no special interests of our own, but the interests of the students, the interests of the workers. We'll go to like marches and we'll talk to people, we'll hand out flyers. A lot of our members are students, actually. Mm-hmm. So they're going to these students' union meetings. I'm not a student, but my partner is a student currently in Concordia Fine Arts, and they're really experiencing the result of austerity. Like, even before the tuition hikes started, Concordia is cutting back on the number of staff they hire, the number of full-time professorships, the amount of classes, and like the quality of education has really declined in the last couple of years.
Right, so it's not only that tuition is getting more expensive, but it's like actually what you're paying for is diminishing in terms of the kinds of services and support that you can expect, and what is the standard is falling.
Yeah, and it's falling everywhere for every university, for every CEGEP. The government last year, I think they cut like 50 million or something for CEGEP infrastructure.
When we talk about money and austerity, I mean, obviously there is an economic motivation for these tuition hikes that were announced, and that is certainly what the CAC like leans on, that there's just not enough money and everyone has to pay their fair share and things like that. But do you see there being a kind of other motivation behind how it was rolled out or who it's targeting?
Yeah, they're targeting Anglophone students and also students that come from out of province. This is very clearly to divide the student body, because what they're really afraid of is the Anglophone and Francophone students uniting together, which did happen in 2012. Like, what, that's what we saw in 2012, like across the board. There is money. Like, the government has money. The government of Quebec is willing to give handouts to corporations.
Yeah, there's like an issue of prioritization, but the narrative that we just keep hearing is like, oh, there's not enough money, and so we're like cutting the frivolities.
Yeah.
And then for some reason we've been kind of convinced that higher education falls under the
it's a nicety, it's a luxury.
Yeah,
you know, you can only have education in times when things are going well, and then we need to cut it. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is that narrative of like fiscal responsibility. We see like all the mainstream political parties saying this. But that brings me back to student activism, because what I see the role of student activism right now in this moment is filling this huge void on the left. I think lots of young people, even old people, are frustrated, and they don't see an expression in the mainstream political parties. The student movement is the expression of that view. And I think the students are really at the vanguard of the left right now.
Can you give us some more examples of what the student movement, at least in Montreal, or tied to Concordia more specifically, what kinds of organizing has happened in the past couple of years regarding the proposed hikes?
So they were announced at the end of 2023. Between the announcement of the tuition hikes and between and the actual strike action, you have to decide democratically on your demands, because a strike is a big deal and you have to get everybody to be in agreement with that. And also, when you do go on strike, you face enormous pressure and intimidation from the university. So you have to make sure people are ready to face that. I wasn't too involved in that preparation period, but my partner was. And so they were like giving speeches in classrooms, making like flyers and things like, what is a student strike? And also explaining like how the economics of a student strike works. Like, why not going to class actually puts pressure on the university. Because I think it's pretty clear to people why not going to work hurts the employer, but not going to the university actually does put economic pressure on the university. If the university can be seen as like a business with business operations, and the main business operation being classes, a student strike stops its main business operation.
It's kind of ironic, because like with the neoliberalization of the university and it being treated more and more as a business with stakeholders, it ironically like makes striking more legible as the
unfortunately that's the situation we're in, where universities are big financial institutions. Like they're almost like banks. Like, the McGill has millions of dollars, like has a huge investment portfolio.
Which, you know, obviously we have seen in the past year or two, especially like the pressure for transparency and shifting around where that money goes in terms of like weapons manufacturing and investing in apartheid in Israel. And
yeah, exactly. Like, and so there's preparation for the strike. You have to picket in a strike. And this was something that had to be like explained to people. Like, picketing can be hard work. So there's going to be some students who want to go to class and break the picket lines. There's going to be some professors who don't support the strike, even though many, many professors did, and many professors, like, canceled class willingly. And also, like, it's especially not easy when we don't have experience of doing that. You know, like, in a workplace, you have a union, which can help, like, explain what to do and organize everyone. But the cool thing about those tuition strike hikes, even though they didn't achieve their main aims, was that like later on that summer, we saw the Palestine encampments. And then that fall, I believe, we saw the student strike for Palestine in November. Yeah. When those two things happened, students like had some experience striking. And so that's one of the things we always say, is when people say like, I don't know if we should go on strike. I don't know if we'll win. It'll be like really disruptive. Those are very understandable things, especially if you've never been on a strike. Even though the tuition hike strikes haven't yet succeeded in rolling back tuition hikes, even though the encampments and the student strike for Palestine haven't successfully gotten big universities like McGill to divest from Israel. Like, when you go and talk to students, in my experience, like, they're not demoralized. They're more ready than ever. The students becoming aware of their, of, like, the political weight that they actually have. Yeah, it's not surprising that it didn't work on the first try or the second try. Mm-hmm. But it's, like, it's just starting. And I think people are willing and ready to escalate. At the end of the day, again, if we're looking at the university as like, a business, a lot of the value of the university is created by the students. The culture that they create, the research that they do, even the intangible things like the atmosphere you feel when you walk through the McGill Quad. So university is really a social product. It's not just we pay professors and they create this thing called the university. You know, a lot of the equation is due to the students. So the students should have more say in the decisions made by the university.
You're listening to Discordia on CJLO 1690 AM.
My name is Angelica. I'm ASFA's academic coordinator. ASFA is the Arts and Science Federation of Associations, which represents roughly 11,000 students in the Faculty of Arts and Science at Concordia.
I reached out to you because I saw your comments in the link about students reaching out to you about difficulties they're facing, getting meetings with advisors or registering for required classes and things like this. So this is like particularly notable, I think, when we consider that already enrolled students have been grandfathered into the pre-tuition hike rates, but then if they exceed their 5 allotted years, which might happen if they can't get into classes they need, that their tuition will then be hiked as well. Is that something you can comment on?
Yeah, I think a lot of students are really feeling the squeeze right now. You know, Concordia has had financial troubles before the tuition hikes hit, and it's just been exacerbated by both that and the visa cap that's been placed on most Canadian institutions. So while they're trying to go in and enroll for these classes, and they're seeing that they can't get in, and they'll have to extend by another semester or another year, a lot of what I'm hearing is almost verbatim, this school is just trying to squeeze me for every dollar that I have. I can't afford to extend another semester.
Do you think that the sentiment of like, I'm just trying to get my degree and get out, keeps students from participating in like strike movements and protests and things like that?
Absolutely. Because I was academic coordinator last year as well, I was really around for all of the strike organizing and the major anti-tuition hike movement at Concordia. And I did so much canvassing in the hall building, just kind of around classroom announcements. And I really tried to engage students one-on-one to see, is this the type of action that suits you? Is this what you want to see? What else do you think that we can do to help fight this decision that was made by the Quebec government? And a lot of students just kind of looked me in the eyes and said, I don't really care. I'm graduating in a year. This is my last semester. It's not my problem. I just want to get my diploma and go. And I think that what is a really all-around attack on higher education in Quebec has demoralized students to the point that they don't feel as though this situation could be remedied.
What are some of the ways you've been trying to educate or convince students that this is their fight or that it's worth investing time and energy into?
We kind of formed a bit of a larger collective last year. So it was a bunch of student unions and member associations kind of all coming together. And we tried to meet students anywhere that they were. So there were a lot of zines for students that were a little bit more rad that already ran in those spaces and were used to that kind of media. A lot of social media campaigns. We had the CSU try to post different informational reels about what the tuition hikes would mean for students. And a lot of it, me especially, was just tabling. I would just grab a stack of flyers, hang out on Hall 7 or on the mezzanine, hand students a flyer and just say, are you aware that this is happening? And then beyond that, it was also a lot of one-to-one engagement on picket lines. So when I was training students to picket classrooms during the strikes, one element that I would always include is come in on a non-contentious energy and just see if you can engage students in conversation, see if they understand what's going on.
A lot of students just seem to not understand why picketing is such an important tactic. Could you try to explain why you think picketing is important?
So something like a university institution is really difficult to protest within because they are so complex and so bureaucratic. Student unions are recognized under the Accreditation Act as like a formal body that represents a certain number of students on a legal basis. So the biggest power that we have as a student union is the right to strike. And striking in a student capacity means withholding academic labor. And going on strike and picketing classes is super important because it places stress on both the institution to act, but also the government. Quebec subsidizes education for its students up to a certain amount, depending on whether or not you're a resident or you're out of province. And what worked so effectively back in 2012 was there was a general unlimited strike right towards the end of the winter semester. And that threatened the government with having to resubsidize the same cohort all over again, while also accepting a new cohort into the university. And then obviously the institution, any strike that goes longer than a couple days is a logistical nightmare because course content is really, really down to the week in university. So if you miss a week of class, it's really difficult for the prof to accommodate. And while there is a lot of inter-union solidarity, and we never mean to put pressure on the professors, what we usually see is a bottom-up pressuring where professors are now really inconvenienced and they'll go to their head of their department. The head of the department will go to the dean, and it's just kind of a snowball upwards effect of what is going on, why are the students so angry? People start asking questions, and it's just a great way to reach as many people as possible because you're really disrupting everybody's day-to-day activities to say, hey, you need to pay attention to this.
What is Concordia's role in combating the tuition hikes, and how can they also better address the needs of their students around like the issues of tuition hikes and budget cuts?
What I'm about to say in terms of what Concordia can do kind of combats everything I believe in as an activist, which is really funny, but really all they could do was take the Quebec government to court and try to contest it, put it off, see if they could get the decision overturned. They announced that they would in fact be taking legal action in conjunction with McGill. That ended up not passing, but I do think that the university did their due diligence in kind of filing that motion and requesting at least the delay of the increases. So we'll have to see how that unfolds because I think the case is currently taking place and we should get a response sometime in the summer or fall, I believe was the last update I received. But that being said, I don't think the administration is consulting students to the degree that they need to be when making these sweeping budget cuts. One of the biggest cuts that we've seen to date is the shuttle bus service. And when we met with Michael DeGrappa, the VP of Sustainability and Infrastructure, we asked him, why didn't you survey students? Why didn't you try to ask the general student body what the usage was like? And he had said he had reached out to the CSU, but didn't hear anything. And then when he informed him that he could have asked ASFA, he could have asked the faculty associations, he said that he did not understand what those associations were, which is why they weren't consulted, which really concerns me. Because we're going into this period where the university is very much picking up the rhetoric of cuts are going to have to happen, but they don't even understand who their own student advocates are.
It's interesting to see the university find room in the budget for increased security and hiring Perceptage last year and things like that.
Michael DeGrappa runs several portfolios, right? It's sustainability, it's infrastructure, but he also runs the security portfolio. I find it very funny that you're cutting, you know, shuttle bus service, you're laying off employees, but then you can suddenly contract, because it wasn't just Perceptage. In the summertime, especially when McGill had the encampment, there were minimum two or three different private security firms that could be seen walking around Concordia. The way in which they're choosing to spend the money they still have is really indicative that there are people in this institution that are running it as a business and not an educational institution.
Why is keeping tuition affordable important?
Education should be a fundamental human right, especially in this season of capitalism, I'll call it, where you really can't get much of anywhere without a bachelor's degree. Making education super inaccessible and incredibly expensive essentially ices out groups of people who just can't afford to put their livelihoods on the line to be able to get a piece of paper that essentially unlocks jobs that will allow you to live comfortably. And a lot of people that kind of tend to face kind of precarious financial situations do belong to many different marginalized communities. So you are telling these folks, you're not allowed to live a comfortable life, essentially, unless you pay to win. Like, we very much live in a pay-to-win economy, but also from an economic perspective, you need to fuel your job market that you have now put this very high barrier of entry on.
My name is Drew McIntyre. I'm a technician at Concordia. I've been working here for about 2.5 years now, so I remember seeing posters around for Blue Fall or something. I was excited because it seemed like a big movement. There had been a big walkout. So I tried to get staff unions involved was my participation with it.
Right, and so you're a member of the CUSSTS is the name of the union? Or
CUSSTS, yes. CUSTS, Concordia University Support Staff Technical Sector. It's any technician at the university, it's people doing technical work.
How did you try to get the union involved?
Well, those unions have a lot of resources. And it does affect us too, like these tuition hikes resulted in ultimately less money for the university because of the lack of enrollment as a response. Less money for the university means less leverage in negotiations for the staff. So that was kind of my argument to my coworkers. And I just brought forward a couple of resolutions, one specifically supporting the tuition hikes movement and two on our union not crossing picket lines. I talked to the union president beforehand.
Okay.
I'd actually come with three resolutions. One was on Palestine, and he said, please do not bring up the Palestine one. I don't want there to be a shouting match. And to my regret, I did not bring it up. Mm. I totally should have.
Like, that might derail the whole thing, basically?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you remember any other things that happened at that meeting or how it went with, like, talking to people, if you ran into any barriers?
No, I was actually surprised at how well it went. Everyone did seem to support it. There wasn't any big pushback.
Do you mind reading off
Sure.
one or two of the resolutions so we have an idea of the language?
CUSTS, my union, resolves to stand in full support of the students in their efforts to resist the tuition hikes. It resolves to participate in and encourage members to join demonstrations, rallies, and strikes organized by the student body. To engage in dialogue with other Concordia unions to build a broad coalition in support of the movement. To authorize allocation of union resources to assist the students in their campaign against the tuition hike. So that was adopted in December of 2020.
Okay. And one of the points spoke about coalition building with other unions. Was that something that was successful at all?
My opinion, no. So we had some unity with the trades union, if I remember right. So what actions did the staff unions take at the end of the day? There were some joint demonstrations, essentially. Giveaways, CSN hats, donuts, pamphlets about the strike and stuff like that. And also pamphlets about the current staff negotiations. Other times where there were student demonstrations, we asked staff members to come out. But it was mostly just CUSSTS. Unions working together is a big problem at Concordia. And Concordia really likes to play the bureaucracy game. So they divide up their negotiations into non-monetary and monetary. And they basically delay. So the reason that unions would go on strike is over the monetary demand. Concordia delays and bickers over these small details. So if there is cause for a strike, they'll go on strike alone. Because none of the other unions are at monetary yet, so they don't want to go on strike yet. Because they're not held up, technically. They'll deal with the one union, give them a shitty deal, then, you know, progress to the next union and get them to monetary. And then,
coming back to the specifics of the announcement of the tuition hikes, what your understanding of the motivation on the government level behind this announcement?
What they did is they took the money from the English universities, they gave it to the French universities, and called it part of the struggle against the Anglicization of Quebec. It didn't remove resources, it just moved them around. But what it does is it divides the population on language lines. You know, French workers and English workers, French students and English students, have every interest in working together and have everything to gain by working together. But the government tries to obscure this by playing up these language debates. And they link it to immigration too. And they play up like the anti-immigrant perspective. And they do that to prevent us from working together, or to at least try to.
It's interesting because I think what you're saying is true about French and English students, English-speaking students, having every interest in working together. And we've seen that, you know, go well, not just in 2012, but in other, you know, last spring with, like, uniting against the Israeli apartheid and, like, different kinds of strikes that have gone beyond one campus. For those students who see right through that, exactly what you're saying, that this is, you know, a kind of manipulation, why is it still not sort of translating?
I think it's seriously a question of the tactics of the leadership of these movements. Mm-hmm. But this movement kind of happened between small groups in the member associations. So a strike was passed, but the mass majority of students had no idea what was going on. And you would need to employ the tactics of 2012 in order to get an actual unity, which means the hard, hard work of having patient one-on-one conversations with the mass student body. Like, you can't just walk up and say, here's a flyer, come down to the mezzanine, like, we have a strike vote. You have to say, hey, like, how's it going? Like, have you heard about the tuition hikes? Like, what do you think about them? Oh, they're awful, I know. Why do you think the government is doing this? We think it's because of this. What do you think of that? And, like, you know, like a 15 to 20 minute conversation, if they're willing to have it. So I think more preparatory work is required to, like, educate the student body on the importance of these strikes and what they can actually achieve. You go to them, you find them where they're at, you sit down, you kneel down in front of them, and you explain.
Given that, what does the ongoing fight against these hikes look like for you?
My end, I'm not particularly hopeful about a reversal of these specific tuition hikes. But at the end of the day, if you want to reverse these tuition hikes, it's going to require a mass movement. And is a mass movement simply on the basis of reversing the tuition hikes possible? I don't think so. Not right now. It's not in the cards. But it is possible that a mass movement could start on the basis of several issues. Like, if you unite the Palestine movement with the student strike movement. It did feel like a bit of a squandered opportunity, because when the news came out, like, it was a big deal. Like, everyone knew about the tuition hikes, and no one liked them.
I think that there's almost this tactic that CAC uses when they announce things that are, like, very controversial or not popular, which they do a lot. When there's a response from the rest of Canada, it's spun as a kind of, oh, here's an example of anti-Quebec hate once again, which obviously has a historical basis that is real. But it's also like, no, this is also real disdain for, like, a very unpopular policy that doesn't help a lot of people. And it's just like there's so much baggage that can be, like, spun so successfully that further kind of entrenches Quebec in this place where even people who maybe weren't so sympathetic to the thing that was proposed then maybe become sympathetic because they see the opposition from all sides.
Absolutely.
You know?
You're listening to Discordia on CJLO 1690 AM.
What is the current state of student organizing against the tuition hikes?
It's had to take on a bit more of an institution-specific level. Anglophones still are a minority in Quebec, so most of the general public doesn't care. Most of the general public, in fact, applauds these changes. So it was really difficult to go out and get support from the general public. And even when you try to turn around and explain to local students, this just sets the precedent for them to increase your tuition, because there was a bill passed a couple years ago where the Quebec government wouldn't be allowed to touch local tuition until 2026. But 2026 is coming up, so that means that as soon as that's lifted, they have carte blanche to do whatever they want to local student tuition. That being said, we as student-funded faculty unions have to pursue campaigns that benefit our students directly. So now that this battle has kind of been thrown into the courts by the universities and there's no public support, there's not much that we can do in the streets for tuition increases itself. So the campaign has very much taken a much more anti-austerity look to it. And then a lot of it is also just, you know, cops off campus, as a broad term for saying, why do we have so much security when we can't afford to function? So that's the way in which tuition hike mobilization has kind of morphed into this broader, more Concordia-specific anti-austerity organizing.
How do you understand this as, like, an ongoing fight, or what do you see as the things that people are investing in or putting in place that, you know, can hopefully still roll back the hikes or have some other kind of a desired effect in terms of squashing austerity or championing, like, access to education?
One of the things I think will be necessary, and that I think people are doing naturally on their own, is connecting the dots between these issues. So we had two separate strikes last year, one against tuition hikes and one for divestment for Palestine. But these issues, the root cause of these issues are both the capitalist system. The crisis that capitalism has got us into has led to the need for the ruling class to impose austerity. And that same crisis leads us into imperialist wars. A lot of the demands we make for the liberation of Palestine and against austerity, the demands are actually similar. For example, we want them to open the books. If they want to lay off professors because they don't have money, prove it to us. Show us where the investments are going. Are they going to weapons companies, or are they going to things that could, you know, could improve the quality of education? Connecting these issues will draw in the widest range of students and even people who are not students, like myself. I see the university as as, like I said, like the vanguard of political activism right now. That's also, I think, the next step is connecting with wider layers of society. The university will try to intimidate and isolate the students against each other and split them into different groups and isolate those groups against each other. Mm-hmm. And how we protect ourselves from that is like by growing the movement and involving wider and wider layers of people.
It's hard not to see something like a cap on international students and not immediately think of, you know, racism and xenophobia being at play. When we look at the international agreements that Quebec has with countries like France and Belgium, you know, immediately missing are like all of the like former French colonies where people continue to speak French but, you know, aren't white. Why aren't they getting this like Quebec tuition rate when it's supposedly about language?
Not to mention that it means that anyone who lives anywhere who's English speaking but happens to have a French passport, unless you're a dual Canadian French citizen, can pay lower rates than anyone else. Yeah, so it's just like if they wanted to actually make it about language, they could do a much better job of it, basically.
Certainly. And then, yeah. I mean, there's also, you know, there's French Canadians living outside of Quebec, like Acadians and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Franco-Ontarians.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what about them? Yeah.
I mean, I guess that just brings us to like, what is the actual motivation here? Like, is it about language laws? And if so, how much of it is really, you know, how much of that is just a way to cater to the majority of the voter base of the CAQ, and how much of it is actually sort of believing its own rhetoric, I guess, that there's like a danger of having international students come in for 4 years, speak English around the plateau, or whatever the education minister sort of talks about as the sort of danger to the French language, and then leave, and how much of it is just a really, really actually well-executed way to hide the fact that the CAQ is justifying the lack of investment in higher education.
Yeah, it really feels like, you know, scapegoating and pointing the finger and giving people something to be mad about, this like so-called foreign threat, instead of looking inward, looking at our governments and saying, hey, wait a minute, like, where's all our money been going and why is it not going into our universities? And, you know, when they say they want to kind of rebalance the scales between the funding that English universities and French universities receive, again, they're really, I think, you know, kind of passing the buck when it's like, well, what is your responsibility here as our government? Like, why are you not investing enough in the French universities that they are being, like, you know, underfinanced or underserved?
Yeah, it's sort of this paradox that we have over the last few decades started to depend so heavily on international student revenue as a way to make universities function, because it became normal to charge much more for international students than domestic students. At the same time that we have relied on international students to fund public universities, the government is also capping immigration and making these universities less attractive to international students, meaning that money won't be coming in anymore. So it's like, it's still not actually a logical kind of economic decision.
When I was in my undergrad, so like 2017, 2018, you know, I remember passing people tabling in the hall building and with the slogan, international students are not your cash cow. So this is not, you know, this is nothing new. They're being bled for all they're worth to fund other people's education.
The interesting thing about this being framed as like an international student issue is that most international students already pay more than $20,000 a year. I think at McGill, like engineering is something like $40,000 a year. So what it means is that who's actually the real losers of this? I guess if we're looking at, you know, the difference between like where we were in 2023 and where we arrived in 2024 is a non-Quebec Canadian students. Like it is an issue of international students, but international meaning beyond the borders of Quebec, which is just interesting to see how it's once again kind of like the CAQ trying to toe the line of like not being a separatist party, but still very much only investing in like one particular vision of like who represents Quebec and who can prosper there.
Yeah, they're promoting a really homogenous like Quebec nationalism that is like white Franco. I agree with a lot of the sentiments of people that people are expressing around just like, well, I'd actually love to learn French and, you know, increase my likelihood of being able to stay in Quebec for myself. It's like, I want to stay in Montreal for the indefinite future, maybe forever, but it is a constant economic struggle of, am I going to be able to find a good job with my limited French? And then it's hard to learn French while you're in school and working. And so I do think like more could be done to help like new Quebecers and students learn French while they're here.
Yeah. And we saw that as being sort of one of the first proposals of the vice chancellors and deans of McGill and Concordia when they were, you know, desperately trying to come up with a compromise. And they said, you know, we'll have mandatory French classes. They were trying to speak the language of the policy and say, okay, if this is really what is the worry, then like, let's talk about how to remedy it. And of course it kind of falls flat, which just exposes that there's something a bit beyond the actual issue of like, we want more people speaking French in Montreal. Cause certainly, yes, you know, Montreal is a different city than Quebec City. There's a lot more people who speak English here. There's a lot more people from places that are not French speaking that pour in every year. And like, that does affect the fabric of the society here, but there's a way to like navigate the so-called protection of the French language that also incentivizes people to contribute to Quebec in ways that are like good for everyone. And, you know, if it's a problem of like retaining labor, of attracting talent, however you want to say it in the kind of neoliberal terms, like this is such a short-sighted way of doing that. And like, frankly, I don't know how they actually really managed to sell it as something that would in the long term benefit really anyone.
Yeah, Sydney, do you want to talk about the Quebec model of combative student unionism?
Sure. So we have explored in a couple of our episodes the ways that student unions work in Quebec. And especially in our 2012 episode, we talked a lot about how the success of that movement, or, you know, some people don't see it as a success, but the kind of enormity of that movement and its many months of apparent unity was due to the fact that in Quebec, there are really strong student unions that actually are modeled very similarly to how we think of other forms of workers' unions. So it's not just like an administrative or like a special interest group that is part of the school, but that students are really understood as being kind of intellectual workers that possess a capital that has a lot of leverage if they withhold it, which means not going to class, picketing classrooms, yeah, going on strike. And we hear from some of our interviewees in this episode, they talk about how a lot of their work of how to, you know, get through to people is about kind of convincing them of that model, that the student is an intellectual worker who can strike, and that that can actually result in better working conditions, meaning them being a TA or an RA, but it also could just mean the conditions under which they study, the conditions under which they research, pursue their degree.
Yeah, I really like the framing of it as like, when students strike, it's a withholding of academic labor that the university relies on.
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of funny how all the different ways we've seen that come up in the last 9 episodes, that the ways that the academic labor of students very materially and also less materially like make up the atmosphere and like fabric of what a university is when you step onto its campus, when you go through its halls, when you meet the people from there, go into a classroom, what you kind of find and feel, and the like foundations under which that like work happens is very much affected by how people are understanding their contribution or their...
Yeah, totally. And it is, you know, it's easy to understand how when students are spending like 4 or 5 years on campus, that they do have kind of this like get in, get out mentality, that they can't miss a single moment to participate in a strike, that like it's not their fight because they're going to be moving on, or just that they don't have the time or energy. So it is easy to see how students are, you know, demotivated or discouraged from participating in strikes. But it was really great to hear from, yeah, some of our guests on this episode, how they've really put in the effort to have like face-to-face conversations with students and meet them where they're at and try and educate them on the issue and invite them into the movement.
And at the same time, when we compare to 2012, the kind of
labor power or the organizing power, what I think was really, you know, missing is that there isn't the same, like in McGill, Concordia, Bishops, there isn't the same kind of integration into federal, you know, student associations that are working behind the scenes for you, you know, before you come to the school, during the time you're at the school, and when you graduate as well. There's still that kind of more consistent body that is able to like devote resources to planning strike actions. And it's not left to the people who are, you know, just arriving in Montreal, trying to go to class, trying to get an apartment, and our rising rent like increases.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm genuinely worried about what all of this means. Like you mentioned, like the cost of rent going up and, you know, food and tuition and people maybe not coming here. Like I fear like how it's going to change the face of Montreal, you know, as a very international, artistic, accessible, affordable city. I mean, not physically accessible. There's stairs everywhere, but, you know, kind of more socially accessible, economically accessible,
mm-hmm.
and how that's changing rapidly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the thing that makes Montreal what it is that it's been such an affordable place for people who don't make money,
yeah,
you know, and are in the pursuit of more noble pursuits, in my opinion, like music and art and like just living well, are able to come and like hang out and connect with people and be out in the streets and be in the restaurants Tuesday at 11 a.m. I don't know. I just think that that's such a loss that there won't be that kind of cosmopolitanism of like people being able to just enjoy what it means to like be here and be with different kinds of people. Because they can't afford to live here. They're demotivated from even coming as a student and getting their foot in the door or yeah.
Yeah, and the idea that all students come and then leave is just incorrect. So many people choose to stay because it is a beautiful city and a beautiful province and a really nice place to live.
And ironically, the reason that people choose to leave, at least in my own life, the people I know who are considering leaving, a lot of the reason has to do with the intense push toward a kind of monoculture, the corporate kind of cat government, the like constant scapegoating of English-speaking Quebecers.
Thank you to Alex O'Neill, May Shukla, Angela Antonakopoulos, and June McIntyre for the interviews, our volunteers for their work on this episode, and to the CRFC Radio Meters Program for funding Discordia. Protest clips are from Montreal City News. Contact us at discordia@cjlo.com with questions or to get involved. You can find this episode in the archives at cjlo.com, on SoundCloud, and on Spotify. Tune in on Monday, April 14th, next week, for the final episode of Discordia, where we'll be joined by guests from previous episodes to look back at the last 50 years of student activism at Concordia. This episode will be broadcast live from Frigo Vert on Concordia's downtown campus at 7 p.m.